Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Good evening, Michael Cohen with producer James Platy. Thank you for joining us on a Friday night in Lansing, 6.09 p.m. On today's program, Pat Robertson, the well-known social conservative and televangelist from the 700 Club, saying some shocking things today, although this time it made him a few fans. We'll find out what he said and why he said it. And did you know that more than 425,000 women suffer a stroke every year in the U.S.? That's about 55,000 more strokes than men suffer. Could alcohol be the remedy? I'll talk to the author of a newly released study on the subject. But first, new jobs numbers out today are giving economists reason to be optimistic, with February seeing over 220,000 new jobs in the U.S. That tops the over 280,000, that is on top of the over 280,000 added in January. So are we now getting the momentum that defines a real comeback for the economy and employment opportunities? To get some perspective, I'm joined by MSU economist Charles Ballard. Charlie, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Always great to get your insight.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Now, we know that last year we saw this very same kind of numbers last February, March, and April.
Right.
We saw net gains of more than 200,000 jobs each month. And then, bam, job growth dropped off dramatically. Are we just as vulnerable for this kind of a slowdown this year?
I think we're probably not as vulnerable, but there are certainly concerns. It looks like one of the things that slowed down the economy in the middle of last year, which was the fears over the European debt crisis, looks like that is for now fixed, and I am not nearly as worried about that as I was recently. I think the biggest wild card for this year is the situation in the Middle East, especially Israel and Iran. If Israel bombs Iran, I think you can expect to see huge increases in the price of oil and gasoline. That could really wreak havoc. But if we can avoid that, we've really got the chance for this to be the best year nationally since 2005. Maybe the best year in Michigan since 1999. So if we can avoid a war in the Middle East, I think we've got some very good chances here.
What is the kind of consistency that really shows that we're on a steady track? Is it getting at least 200,000 new jobs each month?
I think that is a very good signal, but it's more than that. It's that we've had now 6 months in a row where the cumulative total over the last 6 months is averaging better than 200,000 jobs a month. It's actually the best six-month job growth since the end of 05 and the beginning of 06. So we've gone several years since we've had a six-month stretch this good. And I like to always say, don't just look at any 1 month. 1 month in isolation, there's so many things that can happen. But when we've got 6 months now in a row that look pretty good, that's very encouraging. It's the best that the job market has looked in a long time. Mm-hmm. You're right that it looked pretty good about a year ago, but then we had the tsunami in Japan, European debt, and we also had the debt ceiling circus in Washington that almost derailed things.
Now, one thing that has not been moving up very well are wages. They still remain only moderately moving up. The average hourly pay increase up by just 3 cents in February to $23.31. In the past year, it has gone up only 1.9%. That trails the rate of inflation. So in the larger picture, just how stagnant have U.S. wages been?
Well, U.S. wages have been stagnant for the average worker. They've been stagnant for a very, very long time. And this is not just a concern coming out of the financial crisis. This is a very long-term concern. The U.S. economy is twice as big as it was in 1973. But if you adjust for inflation, the median man who works full-time in the U.S. earns less now than in 1973. So what we've seen is a very unbalanced economic growth for almost the last 40 years. We've had lawyers, doctors, scientists, engineers, CEOs, financial types doing extremely well. But it's a prosperity that has not trickled down to the average household nearly as much. And I think that's really the biggest concern. It's not, in other words, it's not just about jobs, although I'm very glad to see the jobs numbers improving. It's about, can we find ways to provide jobs that will improve the standard of living of the broad mass of the population and not just the most highly educated and the best placed?
I'm talking to Michigan State University economist Dr. Charles Ballard. Now, in this election year, I do want to ask you about the corporate tax rate. It seems that from President Obama to Mitt Romney to the other Republican presidential candidates, everyone wants to lower it, whether it's down to 28% or 25%, or I think Ron Paul wants to go down to 15%, or of course that 9% we heard about before. Now, is there a consensus among economists that our corporate tax rate is too high?
I actually think there is, yes. In the sense that what we have is the official corporate tax rate is one of the highest in the world. Now, that doesn't mean that corporations in the U.S. necessarily pay more than corporations in some other places. What we've got is a whole bunch of deductions and exemptions and exclusions and fancy calculation methods. And that means that if your corporation has a really good accountant, and if you can take advantage of the details of the tax law, you end up paying not much in tax, even if the official marginal tax rate is 35%. And so it doesn't make good sense from the economic standpoint to have some companies paying a very high rate and others paying a low rate or getting refunds.
When you look at these loopholes, though, would you say it's most major corporations that are able to avoid paying their fair share of taxes, or is it really a small minority?
Oh, well, it's hard to describe to know what their fair share is, but most big corporations manage to pay substantially less than the official marginal rate. If they paid tax on every dollar of profit the way a lot of us would think it should be calculated, they would pay a rate up near 35%. Corporations don't pay anywhere near that in a lot of cases because they're able to take advantage of various tax breaks.
I want to switch the topic slightly. I know that you are a big believer in funding education, although there are some out there, whether it's Ron Paul or Republican Senate candidate Gary Glenn, who was on the show last night, who say that the federal Department of Education is a colossal waste of money. That we should make our education decisions on the state and local level and eliminate this department. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, I'm not as negative about the federal Department of Education. There are a lot of, certainly a federal program that makes a tremendous difference to the lives of millions of students from low and middle income families is the Pell Grant program, which, because of declining state funding for higher education, and we've seen tremendous decreases in higher education funding here in Michigan and in many other states, that has forced the universities to do a whole bunch of things, some of which are good, like getting more research grants, getting private philanthropy, but one of the things is not good at all, and that's the very large increases in tuition that we've seen. Pell Grants help, and that's a federal program, they help low and middle income children to pay for college, and I think that's a very, very good thing. I don't want college to become something that only the most affluent can afford.
One more thing, as an economist, when you see libertarians look at a truly sustainable way to resolve our federal deficit problem, and they say that we really should be cutting government down dramatically, just eliminating flat-out education, Department of Energy, HUD, the Interior, that these are basically massive bureaucracies that we could really do without. Is there some truth to that?
Oh, I certainly think that there are places in the federal budget where we could do some further trimming. And the nature of an organization like the federal government is it's going to be a large bureaucracy, and that's it's difficult to make that as efficient as you'd like to be. So I think we should always be looking for savings. However, I think it's very important to point out that the programs that you just mentioned are a very small part of the federal budget. The money is in defense, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and the interest on the national debt. That's where the big money is. And so to say, okay, we're going to solve the problem by cutting HUD or by cutting education or transportation, well, yeah, okay, you can do that. But then I would say that there are a lot of very valuable programs there, as well as some bloated bureaucracy. If you cut them, you still haven't solved the problem, because the big money is in things where it's not nearly as politically popular to cut. If you really want to solve the federal budget, eliminate Social Security and Medicare, and then see how you get reelected next time.
Certainly would draw some reaction.
It would draw some reaction.
Economist Dr. Charles Ballard with Michigan State University. I certainly would want to have you on the program again soon to talk about all kinds of other issues, including the proposals of flat tax and the fair tax, and get your perspective on those things. Dr. Ballard, again, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'd love to be on your program again.
Excellent. We will be right